Hi, and welcome to the Curious Climber podcast. This is Mina, and today I'm talking to Anissa. Anissa is a New York-based climber. She refound climbing at the age of 38 when she was going through a difficult time in her personal life. And this kind of refinding of climbing was really liberating for her. She kind of navigated and struggled and figured out how to manage her life as a single mom of three kids in a way that included this new passion of climbing. And she eventually found her way to completely changing her career and creating her own business around climbing. Anissa's viewpoint on the experience of climbing and how it's impacted her life and her whole outlook is really, really interesting to listen to. So she takes people climbing predominantly in the gunks. Like I said, she's New York based. And she teaches all the traditional kind of hard skills of climbing, climbing safely, technique, all the rest of that. But she also really connects with her clients, predominantly female clients, in terms of managing their self-limiting beliefs, helping them to build confidence and bravery. So there's a lot more than just learning to climb in the way that she works. And she's found this work really rewarding and satisfying. And it sounds like she's also learned a lot in return from a lot of her clients. So I found this conversation with Anissa really interesting. We talk about a lot of kind of everyday stuff that people experience. So we chat at the beginning quite a bit about the idea of mum guilt. And again, because she predominantly kind of works and coaches with female climbers, it's something that she comes across a lot and something to that some extent I can newly relate to. So I think there's a bit of something in here for everyone, particularly maybe the female climbers in our audience. So I hope you really enjoy it. Here is Anissa. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We really
appreciate your time on this.
It's always interesting to talk to people with different kind of backgrounds and ways into climbing and ways of experiencing climbing and using climbing in their life. Mm-hmm. And you've kind of, from what I know of you, had quite an interesting experience with that, essentially. Like, you've found climbing as your own personal thing, but then you've also made it into your work, but at a kind of later stage in life, not as your initial career.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, I started my initial career, like as a traditional accounting job that was
okay,
reliable, good job kind of thing. And yeah, I only really got into climbing in my late 30s. Mm-hmm. After I decided to get divorced, I kind of got into it. And part of it was I dabbled a little bit when I was younger, but a big part of it was just using it as a healing tool to kind of try and get some control back over my life during my divorce.
And what made you find climbing in that moment? You said you'd had some climbing experience before that. What made you suddenly think, oh, climbing is what I need right now?
You know, ironically enough, like I like found out about climbing and decided that I wanted to try it. And I had signed up for this, like, you know, learn to climb weekend. Uh-huh. And it was that exact weekend that I went on my first date with my soon to be husband and then later ex-husband. And so I feel like, I kind of learned how to climb. I started to build a small community and then was spending all this time with my boyfriend. And I remember I had dinner with a bunch of climbers and they're like, oh, are you single? What do you do? And I'm like, oh, I just started dating this guy. And they're like, does he climb? I was like, no. And they're like, get rid of him. You have to find somebody who climbs. I just feel like it was this interesting kind of divergence in my path where, you know, I just spent more time with him rather than spending more time with climbing when I just kind of found it. Mm. And, you know, shortly after went and had kids. And so I never really like made a conscious decision to give up climbing or I didn't like it. I just got sidetracked by other things. And that interest was kind of always there lingering.
Okay. Just life took over.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so when I got divorced, it just felt right to kind of get back into it. It was something I always loved also, like just for myself, like I kind of found climbing on my own, and it was just something, you know, I could do to help me feel strong again, help me feel resistant or resilient, and, you know, get back a sense of control, which, you know, you never quite have. But this idea of control during this time when everything else was just kind of blowing up.
And how did you get back into it? Did you kind of go to another introductory kind of course or something yourself
time? I started with like meetup.com and found like a bunch of people going rock climbing. And I just threw myself into it. Like I joined a local gym. I joined all the like online forums. You know, I hired guides. You know, I just kind of went at it with this like voracious appetite. Yeah. And kind of couldn't get enough of it. I mean, at that time too, was the first time. So when I got separated or divorced, my kids were very young. My youngest was 9 months old.
Oh, wow.
And my others were 3 and 5. And so we started instituting this like every other weekend schedule. So suddenly, you know, as this mom who had 3 little ones and was just kind of honestly overwhelmed by it and enjoyed by it, you know, of course, but suddenly I had like this free time in my life that I never had before. Mm. And so I had the time to kind of go out and explore and try traveling a little bit. I mean, even if I had 3 days, I was going away, climbing someplace just to kind of, you know, maybe even escape a little bit from everything that was going on.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I have one child and I definitely need that kind of me time. And it's hard to carve it out. It's really hard to carve it out. So I can see how that kind of, albeit in a really difficult situation, created a bit of an opportunity for you where you suddenly had some time to put into yourself.
Yeah. I often think that like that should be a regular thing for, I mean, I'll just speak for me. We didn't have this like me time, your time when we were together. It was just like triage. We had 3 kids and like, let's get through the day. But I often think that would be a nice thing to do for moms with kids, just to be like, you know, either once a month or whatever, like this is my weekend, like guilt-free. And if such thing exists, I mean, the guilt, I talk about this a lot, and even with the recent Mother's Day last weekend, kind of ruminating about it, like it never, that like mom guilt kind of never quite goes away. Like there's always this conflict of wanting to go climb and be outside versus all your other responsibilities to your kids. And my kids are older now. My daughter's 16 and my boys are 15 and 13. So, you know, obviously they're much more independent for me to have the time to go out and climb. But, you know, even small decisions like being late for dinner or just not having time to sit with them and ask them about their day. You know, it's a hard thing to manage.
Yeah, definitely. I was speaking to a friend about this kind of mom guilt thing the other day, and she's got 2 little ones and I have 1 little one. And we were talking about like, you know, using the evening time once they've gone to bed to like climb or train or like do that kind of stuff, and how sometimes you just want to sit on the sofa, but that's your time. So you've got to use it. But then also this guilt of if you're a bit more tired the next day when you're playing with your children, especially if they're that young age where they're still at home with you a lot, there's that guilt of, well, I'm here and I'm with them, but I'm tired. So I'm not my best version of myself. So sometimes you can, and I was thinking, wow, there's so many layers to this, because it's not just feeling guilty when you're not there. It's feeling guilty when you're there, but you're maybe not your best self because you've done something for yourself the day before. And then ultimately you're tired. And I was like, wow, there's really just like no getting away from it.
I always actually have to make a conscious effort to stop and be like, you're doing a good job as a mom, because I always feel like I could be doing better. Like there's always something more I could be doing. But you know, you'll never arrive there, right? You'll never be like, yes, I've done every single thing I could for my kids. Like check, Now I can go do something for myself. Like, it's a destination that you never get to. But it's important, I think, for moms to stop and be like, you're doing good. You don't even have somebody to remind you of that, which hopefully you do, like to remind yourself, be like, you're doing good. You're doing good.
Yeah. Definitely. And also that I think it's good for kids to see, I mean, mine's not really at an age where I guess he'll remember much yet, but like to see your parents as adult individuals with their own wants and needs and desires and passions, and to kind of, you know, because I think it's very easy to look at our parents and just see them as like mom and dad, and that's their only identity and role. And in the same vein, I think doing and spending time doing the things that you're passionate about and that make you happy probably make you a better parent as well.
Absolutely.
Especially in the long run.
Yeah. I'm kind of looking forward to the time when my kids are adults that I could kind of ask them their reflections about what they think of like me climbing and me building this like business around it and stuff like that. Like now they're just like, whatever, cool. Like they know it's part of my life and they're just, you know, like they're in their own world. But, you know, I'm kind of wondering, like I'm looking for feedback from them, like in an adult mind to be like, yeah, when you did this, it really taught, you know, like this is the conversation.
Yeah.
Like my daughter in 10 years be like, mom, you know, that day that you went climbing and you came home and you were feeling really good about yourself. Like, I remember that. And that helped me have a good day the next day when I was at school. And this way I could be like, yes, I always knew it. But, you know, I don't know if that'll come. It's probably a lot more subtle than that, but.
Yeah, but you probably will end up having some kind of conversation like that with them in the future.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, maybe.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So we've slightly segued because obviously we haven't really talked about what you do, but got distracted by the mom guilt thing, which we can definitely come back to. But tell us a little bit about what you do for your business. So what you do for your work within climbing, because that's kind of going to be, I guess, one of the center topics that I want to talk to you about.
Yeah. So I'm a climbing coach and a climbing guide. So I take people outside in the Gunks in the New York area. So that's, you know, trad climbing. So I'm kind of like your, you know, traditional guide in that aspect, and that I take people climbing. But then what I also do is I do kind of online programs and other kind of empowering events around climbing for women. And a lot of the women that I connect with are usually women, you know, that kind of found climbing a little bit later in life, which is really exciting to see a woman like in her 40s or, you know, in their 50s being like, wow, I just found this sport and like, how can I get involved in it and everything like that. So, I mean, pre-pandemic, I was teaching a lot of classes in local gyms and taking people outside as much as I could, given, you know, my three kids. But really kind of wanted to connect with more people on a bigger scale. And so once the pandemic hit and the classes kind of stopped, that's when I expanded my business to create these, you know, online communities, one of which is this club that I call the Confident Climbers Club. That's a small group of women, and we have regular Zoom calls and events. We do even like get together. We actually, a bunch of us just went out to Vegas together and climbed together, which was
nice.
Really nice to see women in person that you've been like talking to on Zoom for months. But really, yeah, just to encourage women climbers in any stage of life and really at any level. You know, I'm not a strong climber by any means. And I really like to be focused on the growth and the learning rather than the grades. I mean, probably more because I'm not climbing the hard grades, but you know, it doesn't have to be. Climbing can be just as powerful an experience, whether you're climbing, you know, a 5.5 or a 5.15. So that's something I really enjoy teaching and connecting and sharing with other women.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds amazing. So what is that like? What does that look like in terms of your coaching? And someone was going to come on a session with you and they're like, cool, she's going to teach me some, you know, some traditional climbing skills and rope work and and, you know, movement skills and things like that. But how do you teach the other stuff? Like, is it that they learn to climb and those things are kind of inherently transferable skills, or are there particular methods that you use?
I don't know if I have any specific methods. A lot of it is just, you know, the process of self-discovery, you know, dealing with disappointment, dealing with frustration, you know, how to be really more focused on the growth and the learning of it. I mean, you know, we all know it's great to get to the top, but it's not always about that. So just, you know, having a progression, whatever that progression is for that person, right? So since a lot of the women I deal with have, you know, families and kids, it's not like they could go out and be training every day. And sometimes that can get really frustrating when, you know, you're looking outside and it's a beautiful day and you want to go climbing, but you have all of life's responsibilities. So it's helping people still have climbing an important part of their life, even if it's just a little, and helping them get focused on like tangible goals that will help them progress. Even if it's spread over, like I could only have like a couple hours a week, or I'm only getting outside twice a month, or whatever it is, and still like appreciate that joy for what it is and still feel connected to the community if you can't get out all the time, or still learn little skills that you could do at home that help you feel like you're getting something done and that you're getting stronger, you're learning more, or anything like that. And then just other like discussions and about self-compassion, vulnerability, like all those other things that, you know, can find its way into climbing, but are also like a bigger part of your life. And kind of seeing the parallels and where you could draw learning between the two.
Mm. Yeah, and I imagine, yeah, definitely. And I imagine it's really kind of individual, like you're working with someone, you're coaching them, and through their individual process, particular things will come up for those people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you find that there's like common kind of key learning points that people, that you coach find?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is like, you know, fear and not so much even like the fear of falling is like an injury is like the easy one. Like, oh, you know, like that's easy to point out. And I think that's easy to admit. But delving on the fear of judgment, the fear of not keeping up, the fear of I'm too short, I'm too overweight, I'm too old, you know, all those other kind of limiting beliefs, they come up in one way or another, but it's hard sometimes to have that self-reflection, or it's work to do to have that self-reflection and really see how that might be or how it is affecting your climbing. You know, it's not always an easy thing to admit that, you know, you don't always feel so great about yourself. It's easier to just be like, oh, I can't do that climb. That's too hard for me. I'm not good at roofs. I don't know how to crack climb, and just walk away without stopping to be like, well, you actually can, but there's something else going on in your mind that's telling you that you can't. And let's dive a little bit deeper and understand why.
Yeah. Like what is it you're afraid of?
Yeah. Or what are the little things that you could build confidence in little ways that'll just like start the momentum of be like, maybe I can do this. Like, okay, like this is a possibility now, instead of just this easy answer of I can't because ... you know?
Yeah. And do you think that those things, those self-limiting beliefs in particular, are more prevalent in women? Like, do you think that is, there's a kind of gender split there?
I do. You know, I can't say I really do a lot of work with men, so I don't know their side to make assumptions. But I definitely do. It's a little bit more inherent in women. I'm not even sure why exactly. But But yeah, I don't know if we just compare ourselves to other people too easily, or are just too, you know, overwhelmed with everything in life that it's easy just to kind of not focus on ourselves or not take that time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, also on, you know, historically in sport, women haven't participated as much in men, you know, this, the last kind of 50 years, that's changed a lot. But, you know, if you look at the kind of history and the way that women and men have interacted differently in culture, you know, like representation, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It kind of explains, I think, some of the differences that we maybe see nowadays.
Yeah.
To a certain extent anyway. Yeah. And balance, I guess, is a big thing. Balancing kind of the responsibilities, like you're saying, like we talked about all the kind of mum guilt. Do you think dads get dad guilt?
I don't know. I'm sure they do.
They must do. But you don't hear the phrase very much, do you?
No. Yeah. No, I'm sure there's a little torn or whatever, but you know, I guess it depends on what your upbringing is and how you were raised to believe what the roles, right? The gender roles of the mom and the dad are in the family. Mm-hmm. You know, like I grew up like my mom was a stay-at-home mom and my dad went to work and did the work. And that those were like the very traditional roles. So the mom was the one that had the key responsibilities with the kids. So if mom wanted to go have a day out and go do something for herself, it wasn't just like an easy, you know, pass off to the dad, at least for me. Like it involved a lot of moving. I remember when my kids were little, I went shopping with a girlfriend and it was like a thing to plan the day and who's going to do what and where the food is. And like, it was like 2 days of planning for one day of shopping, you know? But yeah, I'm not sure if the dad guilt is quite as strong as the mom guilt.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we can only deal in kind of anecdotal experience, can't we, on that? But do you find then that some of the women you work with, you're having conversations with them around not just kind of their experience when they're actually climbing, but helping them to be assertive with what they need and want in terms of like time and space to do the thing that they love?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I
imagine that comes up quite a lot.
Yeah. Even the idea of like, you know, it always goes, okay, let's look at your calendar. Like, where do you have time? You know? And it's like, I mean, my son goes to aftercare once a week. You know, I could put him in a second day, but I feel bad that like I'm putting him in the, you know, a second day for me to go have time for the gym. And it's like, well, your son's enjoying it. He's having a good time. He's with his friends. You're moving your body. You're getting some mental clarity. You're feeling good about yourself. Like it's a win-win. Like where's the hesitation? And I relate to that on the other side too. Like, you know, this idea of handing off the responsibilities of your kid to somebody else who you could go do, you know, and maybe it's the notion that, you know, climbing is selfish or any other activity that you're doing solely for yourself is selfish that leads to it. But even with that, it's a hard mindset shift to be like, it's okay. Go to the gym. Leave Johnny with his friends, like everybody's happy. But it's a hard thing to get there sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And do you think being out in nature plays into it as well for some of your clients, having that outside time?
Oh, absolutely. I know it is for me. I mean, even if I can't climb, just getting outside is so important and just kind of grounds me with everything. I wish my kids were more interested in getting outside, but they're not. And that, you know, and that's like another piece of it is this desire to like want to bring your kids and have them involved in everything. I mean, I surely had that dream when my kids were younger, like we're all going to go on climbing trips together and do all this stuff. And they're just kind of like, I've taken them climbing. They're not really that interested in it. I don't know if it's just because I do it or they're just not, but also being okay with you having a separate activity Like, if you could get your kids to do it and make it a family event, like, that's awesome. But again, like, it's also okay if it's not, you know? Mm.
Yeah. Do you find that you have moments where you learn stuff that's helpful for you and your climbing when you're coaching? Like, do you find it's like a two-way thing that come away being like, you know, this client really made me realize this thing about my climbing or like my experience with climbing in some way?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely makes me more reflective as I try to, you know, put myself more in their shoes or to understand where they're coming from. You know, I like to journal a lot. So sometimes, you know, if I have some sort of provoking conversation, I'll just kind of explore, like look at myself again and explore those or even vice versa as I'm just, you know, reading or listening to podcasts or experiencing my own climbing. It always, you know, brings something new that I was like, how can I bring this to the women in my community? Like, how can I teach them this, or how can I share this experience I had in a way that's meaningful to them rather than just be like, hey, guess what I did today? You know, like, see if there's a takeaway for other people from it.
Mm. Yeah. 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 And it's really interesting how climbing helps you build that kind of confidence. Almost isn't like a word that encompasses enough, I think, what climbing teaches you. Like, yes, it teaches us to be confident, but it's that like real deep trust in your instincts and kind of an autonomy as well, not just in a skill base, you know, I trust my rope work, I trust that I know what I'm doing here. It's every movement and every kind of subtle adjustment of your body, you're trusting your body to do what it needs to do on the rock. And I know not everyone feels like that when they're climbing, but in those kind of best experience moments on the rock, a lot of us experience that. And I think that's so empowering.
Yeah.
Really transferable.
Like connection to self in a way that you feel like you really know yourself, even if it's for a brief moment. Like, you really know who you are. And like you said, part of it is like that's confidence, but it's a deeper thing. It's like connection to self in a really meaningful way. You know, and that could be fleeting. Like, you could feel that obviously like one day or one moment, then later you're just like, I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. You can go from, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know.
Chaos a minute later.
Yeah, and you're just like, I just need to go to bed and try again tomorrow. But it's nice to catch glimpses of that and then remembering that's there.
Mm. Was that something that really played in for you when you refound climbing, that building confidence that then gave you confidence in other areas of your life?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I, you know, like I said, during my divorce, I felt like just everything was blowing up. I had no idea what was going on. And I knew that like, I wouldn't know what was going on for a couple of years, right? Like, it took a year to just process the divorce and then just to figure out like what my life is going to look like and what it's going to be. So for somebody who, you know, I always joke around that I'm, you know, like I mentioned, I'm an accountant at heart, like spreadsheets and tracking like makes me feel really good. When I get anxious, I like need a spreadsheet and then I put everything in and then I'm like, okay, I can see it. So not having so much uncertainty and not having like the spreadsheet for after divorce life was like a whirlwind, you know? And so climbing kind of gave me those brief moments of, like I said, like control or glimpses into just like, it's going to be okay. Like this and you're taking a moment just to breathe. You're taking a moment, you know, to be present and not to think about where I'm going to live. What am I going to do for work? Where, you know, what's going to happen to the kids or like, you know,
that's too really,
much to think about.
Yeah. Too much to think about. That's really interesting though, that because I understand what you say about the kind of presence of mind that climbing gives you. You can step out of the rest of your life for a bit and just focus on exactly what you're doing in that moment. And I think that's really kind of powerful for people. But the certainty versus uncertainty, I kind of think of climbing as quite an uncertain thing. You know, there's so many variables. There's, you know, like, for example, when you're on-siting a route or something, you're like, oh, okay, I'm like by my last bolt or my last bit of gear, and I've just got to set off into the unknown, and I've got to trust in my skill base that both physically and mentally I can deal with what is up there, and hopefully there'll be some gear, or hopefully I'll be able to get to that next thing. And like, I think of climbing as actually, I guess it's a really good tool for learning to deal with uncertainty, because it contains a lot of uncertainty. But I can also imagine a situation where someone is, say, in a life crisis of sorts, and climbing just, you know, is tips them over the edge.
And the thing is too, like, at this time I was new to climbing, right? So I wasn't like quite leading yet, or maybe I was just venturing into leading. And part of it was a little bit like, I didn't know enough about climbing to know about the uncertainty of it all. I was just like, happy to be on the rock, happy to be following somebody, happy to be outside and look at a bird flying. Like, I didn't know, kind of, I was a little bit unaware of the full risks and fear that went with climbing. It was just pure joy in the beginning. Mm. And actually, I just kind of reflected on this recently and made a post about it, how, like, in the early years of climbing, I know you started like at a super young age. Mm. But for me, in the early years of climbing, like, it was just so joy and exciting. And I didn't have any of these notions about, like, you know, what it means to, like, the big fear that's involved, or the bigger issues, or I was just out there having fun. Like, I didn't care what I was climbing. Mm. I didn't care what the grade was. Like, there was no attachment to the success of climbing in and of itself, as in like picking a route or being able to send something. It was just like enjoyment. And there was so much excitement about the learning that, like, it was just like a kid in on Christmas morning, like, everything is just shiny and new. And, you know, I remember one of my early days, I had hired a guide and we went climbing out in Red Rock. And then later on that dinner, we went out to dinner and I was with a bunch of climbers and they were all talking and exciting and, you know, making hand motions of the climb. And I had no idea what they were talking about. It was like another language. I just remember, like, I can't wait to know what they're talking about. Like, I was about the learning. I was just listening. Like, I was even too afraid to even like try and jump into the conversation, because I had no idea, you know. But like, that excitement and joy is just so, so wonderful. So that's, you know, the uncertainty and the fear that comes with my climbing now wasn't present then. And I think that's an aspect. So I always encourage, like, new climbers, you know, everybody wants the next step. What gear should I buy? What, you know, what should I do? What class should I take next? Or like, just go out and climb and like find what it means for you to be in that space. And we could worry about what, like, technical skills or what class you need to take, you know, or what training you need to do. But that's later. Like, just experience it for what it is. And then when you get to a point where you feel like, okay, I've plateaued, or I need to learn this specific, then we could talk about, like, specifics. But in the very beginning, like, just, you know, stick with the joy, because some days you don't have that, you know?
It is almost like, you know, when, I guess, kids find something that they love, that they don't worry about all that other stuff to do with, like, achieving or success or ambition. They're just enjoying it for what it is. And it's finding a way to cultivate that.
Yeah. Not it's just curiosity, like being like curiosity and wonder. And that's something I've kind of introduced into my climbing recently, is approaching harder and scarier climbs with a sense of curiosity, and just approaching a climb and saying, let's see what this is about. Rather than like, I got to make it to this, or what gear do I need here, or what if I can't get to the top, or how am I going to bail, or what if I get hurt? Like, just showing up and being like, let's just see. Let's just be curious. And that shift for me in my mindset really helped alleviate a lot of anxiety over climbing harder or scarier stuff.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's liberating, isn't it? And that kind of, I wrote a small article recently about things that I've learned about through climbing. And one of the things that I talked about was failure, and that failure is okay. And not even just okay, it's like really fine. And that was so liberating.
Yeah.
Because if you're always trying things that you kind of know you can do, then you never really come up against, like, you might fail during the process of doing something, but there's this like ultimate success at the end because of where you've pitched your kind of goals. Mm-hmm. You know, it's within that kind of safety zone of, I'll probably do X, Y, or Z, this, you know, route or whatever. Mm-hmm. And being able to step out of that allows you the kind of potential to do something that you maybe thought you might never do.
Yeah.
But to step out of it, you've got to be okay with, like, I might never do it. And I've definitely had that experience of like giving up on things and being like, turns out I am not strong enough or whatever. You know, I don't quite have the skill set in this moment to do this thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the dust settles and you're like, oh, life goes on. And that was like really liberating for me. And it sounds really simple, but just finding out that failure is really fun.
Yeah. You're like, I tried that. That was good. Okay. What else can I try? You know, like, without being like, I got to get this done. I've been working on this for so long and I have to get it. And, you know, if I turn away now, what does that mean for my self-worth and how people look at me? And, you know, and just be like, okay.
Yeah.
Just do something else.
I tried it. I couldn't do it. Okay. No one really cares. I don't need to care that much anymore. So cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds so simple, but.
I know it's so hard to wrap your head around and also to keep that consistently. I find that a lot of the lessons in climbing, like one day you'll just be like, it's all connect. You're like in total flow and you're like, I got it. Like everything makes sense. And then like, 2 days later, you're like, I don't know what's going on. But, you know, hopefully those periods, you know, over time get longer or you could kind of be a little bit more rest assured that they exist enough to be like, well, you know, I know I could find this again.
Yeah. It's interesting what you were saying about finding climbing later in life and feeling like everything was shiny and new and, you know, just being pure joy, because I can also imagine that. And obviously I don't speak from experience because I started as a young child, but maybe finding climbing later in life could be more challenging in some ways because you have all these kind of adult preconceptions about how we're supposed to do stuff and about success and about achievement and about being, you know, good at our hobbies and all that kind of stuff. Whereas when you're a child, I think that simplicity is a bit easier to come by. Or at least for a lot of children, it will be easier to come by because of that kind of mindset. So I'm wondering if some of the clients that come to you in later life, you're having to like unpick stuff that's established from other things, you know, like, sorry, I'm not being that clear. I guess an example I'm thinking of is I remember a female climber once saying to me that they sometimes didn't want to try moves on the wall because they were really hyper aware of how their body looked on the wall. And, you know, that body got image, confidence side of things. And I it was a kind of light bulb moment for me that I was like, wow, yeah. Like in climbing, you're literally taking your body and putting it up on a wall, not for people to look at, but you know, that's not the point of it, but it's
right.
It is right there on display. And, you know, we're often looking at everyone's asses, aren't we? Basically. And it had never, ever occurred to me that was something that would make me say self-conscious about climbing or make me go, oh, do you know what? I'm not going to put my heel up there to do this move because I don't want to expose my physical body in that way.
It's so interesting. Now that you mentioned that, I do recall that I took a woman outside. I started with her in a gym and then we went outside for the first time and she had a significant amount of weight loss that she had a lot of like skin hanging off of her body mm-hmm. and stretch marks. And, you know, I kind of hadn't thought about that aspect too of like, you know, being conscious of how people are looking at you in terms of your physical body. But we went outside climbing, and later on she told me it was like the first time she ever wore a short sleeve shirt. That it was like wow. years she wore a short sleeve shirt because she was like embarrassed about her arms and everything. And again, when I was climbing with her, like it didn't even occur to me, you know, like, oh, you know, but yeah, you know, I think you're just coming in with a lot of these more self-limiting beliefs that you would have as an 8-year-old, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. And there's so much internal dialogue for women in particular around the way our bodies look and the way we're seen. And it's not necessarily that women are inherently vain. It's that we live in a culture that puts beauty ideals very high on the list of things to achieve. And I think that really does play into sports a lot for women, or can do.
And also just the idea of overall self-worth. You know, it's easy to... it's easy to judge yourself harshly if you feel like you can't do something. I mean, I tell this story to people around me all the time, but like I had like a little meltdown climbing last year. Like I was following a route in Red Rock, you know, Frogland. It wasn't difficult, but kind of like at the time I was working to meet some of my prerequisites to take the AMG Rock Guy course. Mm-hmm. And I was really stressed out about the limited time I had to get these climbs done, mostly because the type of climbing that I needed to get done wasn't really readily available on the East Coast. So like, you know, I had to, again, take 2 weeks off and, you know, get my ex-husband to help with the kids so I could like fly out west. And there was just a lot of pressure. But as I was climbing, I suddenly just had a major meltdown. I was just like crying, sobbing. Nothing happened. I didn't fall. And I think what happened was just the stress and the overwhelm. But you know, I was just making a move that felt kind of difficult. And in my mind, it was like, if I can't do this move, I'm never going to be able to do these climbs, and then I'm never going to be able to take my rock guy course, and then I'm never going to be able to guide multi-pitch, and then people will think that I suck. People will think I'm irrelevant. And next thing you know, the snowball continued so far that next thing I know, I was like eating ramen noodles in the rain in a gutter, homeless. Mm-hmm. You know, that dialogue, you know, took, I don't know, 30 seconds, 60 yeah. seconds on the route. And it took me, you know, weeks to unwind. Like I knew from a rational point of view that that wasn't reality. But when you're in those moments, when you start to really doubt yourself, even if you can step outside and view it from a rational point of view, it's still really hard to unravel in the moment. And I think there's just a lot of self-doubt that could creep in from different ways, you know?
Mm. It's amazing how quickly we go from fear to doubt to shame. Oh, and then shame is like really, really, really destructive place to be.
Oh yeah.
But that little pathway, I feel like that can accelerate really quickly. And because climbing involves a lot of fear and kind of vulnerability, like putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
It can be a bit of a kind of trigger, for want of a better word.
Yeah. No, it's, I was kind of surprised that as I started like teaching and coaching more about climbing, how climbing truly is like a vulnerable sport. And I don't mean physically. But before that, I would never think to connect the word vulnerability with climbing. Like climbing was a physical thing. It was maybe scary and fear of heights and like all those kind of things. But vulnerability was a word that I never would go to.
if somebody said, what's climbing like for you?
Mm.
But now I'm seeing it so much more because I think it, part of it goes to that trust with yourself. You know, if you kind of lose sight of trusting yourself or have that doubt, it's so easy to feel kind of exposed and to a sense almost like the shame kind of kicks in a little bit and it's easy just to kind of snowball from that. I don't know if I'm making much sense, but I do, you know, I'm a big fan of like Brene Brown and I listen to her and read her works a lot. And I find so much connection with what she says about shame and vulnerability and curiosity and all that stuff with climbing. Like I almost, I'm curious, like if somebody ever took her rock climbing, if her whole head would just explode and be like, yes, like this is it. Like, this is what I've been talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And where do you think your coaching? So in lockdown, you were doing more kind of online stuff. You said you did a trip to Vegas. Are you going to be doing more? Are you going to merge the two, your kind of outdoor
coaching
and your coaching?
Yeah. I mean, ideally, like, you know, my life goal would just be, you know, getting my kids to college, making sure they're okay, never have to worry about them, which we all know will never happen. And then traveling the world and connecting in person with these women that I've connected with online. So, I mean, I just started this online community when the pandemic started. So it's probably just shy of 2 years old. And it's something I'm still learning to manage and to see what works for people and to see kind of also like what I'm willing to give with my time and my resources, because I always want to do, you know, all the things and it's just not reality. I'd ideally like every month we'd be traveling to some other climbing location and kind of connecting and learning from there. That would be like heaven for me.
Mm. So you're interested in kind of long-term work with clients, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Long-term work with someone on their climbing kind of aspirations and journey.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and one thing I've kind of had to like struggle with, struggle or work with is my own kind of limiting beliefs around my climbing and my age and kind of the inevitable decrease in strength that will happen. Unfortunately, I turned 50 last year and that was kind of a thing for me. In some ways I feel like I'm climbing stronger than ever just because I've done a lot of mental work around it. But you know, it's always going to be this lingering thought that physically my strength will eventually decline. I think easy for us to be like, oh, I used to climb this, I used to do this, you know, like I often compare myself to things I could do as my younger self. And I have to remind myself that, you know, I'm a different person.
Mm-hmm.
In every aspect, physically, mentally, emotionally, everything, even on a cellular level, right? Like we are different than we were. And to be okay and to embrace with just where you are at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a couple of surgeries on my elbows. And so it was always like, will I gain my strength back? Can I still be able to climb as well as I did after the surgeries? And that was a very like specific thing. There was a surgery and then there was like a recovery. But dealing with just the overall process of aging and how to, I guess, still feel strong and relevant in a sport where there's all these fabulous young people doing amazing things and kind of knowing that those days are behind you sometimes can be really discouraging. And so I find hope in being able to connect with women and climb and teach on this more kind of emotional, mental, vulnerable state, because that will be with you like forever. And I almost find that learning those skills also makes you a better climber in a different way than, you know, how many pull-ups you could do, how strong you could pull a roof, or, you know, stuff like that. So maybe it's just my own creation and finding a piece with my age. Like, I have to recreate this, but I think there's a lot of value and a lot of encouragement, especially for women that are finding climbing later in life, that it's not like, oh, I'll just find climbing now, but I'll never be as good because, you know, I'm too old or I'm not strong. Mm. It's like,
but also, what is good? You know, how do we define good? Like, and if we're more focused on the process, then that you can apply that anywhere.
Yeah.
I really had, I guess, experiences with that, having recently had a baby and coming back to climbing. And I've actually found that my climbing is going really well. So that's really like a positive, but I didn't really focus on that so much as focusing on getting back to a point where I could climb. My thinking around physical recovery was get to a physical point where it's interesting enough to be fun for me. Mm. You know, like if you've climbed at whatever level in the past, doing something much, much, much easier could get boring. Yeah. So the challenge level has to be in a range where you're having to problem solve, where the movement is interesting. That's going to be a little bit different for everyone where that range sits. But for me, thinking about it like that and thinking about, okay, I don't need to get back to necessarily where I was, but I need to get into that range where the challenge level is interesting. And then I'm good. If it gets better, great, which it has, but it didn't need to. In my mind, it needed to get into that interesting phase. Cool. Oh, it sounds so interesting. I wish I could like come on some of your trips.
Oh yeah. Well, we'll have to plan an international trip and come visit you.
Yeah, that would be ace. Are there any other things that we haven't covered? I feel like we've covered loads. Are there any things that we haven't covered that you really wanted to dive into?
No, I don't think so. Not specifically. Just, you know, encouraging people that, kind of to your point, that climbing can be whatever you want it to be. It doesn't have to be, you know, what all the climbing magazines say or what all the, you know, fancy, beautiful, picturesque pictures of everybody doing like fantastic things. It's whatever you want it to be. And like you said, it's, you find that challenge that makes you feel good, wherever that is. And that's okay.
Mm. No, that's lovely. That's a nice place to end on as well. So if people want to find you, you have a website and social media. I can link to those on the podcast notes. So if people want to find you, they can.
Yeah. So my business is Genuine Climbing, and the same thing on Instagram. I'm at Genuine Climbing, and you can find me there. Reach out to me. I reply to all messages personally.
Nice. That's awesome.
Feel free to, drop me a line and let me know. I'm always curious to see where people are in their journey.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
No, thank you so much.
It's been really nice to chat.
Yeah, you as well.